Welcome, everyone. My name is Jared Warnagle. This is M&M Chat, show where I sit down with whoever the heck wants to give me an hour of their time as we discuss their experiences with TTRPGs and their creative projects. Today, I am joined by Mark Garkusha of the Cast Die podcast, not to be confused with the Power Word Kill podcast, which I don't know if that's a real podcast, but it doesn't matter. Mark, please introduce yourself and tell us about your show.
Hey, man. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on. I'm really happy to be here. I'm Mark Garkusha. I'm a voiceover actor, a regular actor, sometime writer, and most recently an actual play podcast DM slash producer slash editor slash writer. The Cast Die podcast is it came out of just a bunch of friends who wanted to hang out and play a game. Some voiceover buddies of mine, we realized that we all had this love for Dungeons and Dragons, and we decided to, you know, get out there and start wading into the actual play podcast realm.
Yeah. Hey, what better reason do you need?
I can't think of one.
And you know, as with the popularity of Critical Role, them being voice actors, you're saying you're doing voice over work. I'm sure there was at least some type of like, oh, hey, like people like hearing good voices. We've got good voices.
Yeah.
And you do. You very much so do. Say, listening to an episode, I was like, this is wonderful.
Thanks. Yeah. We're lucky in that regard, and that's what most of us do for our day jobs. And also that, you know, then we, because of that, we already had like the equipment. We were like, why don't we give this a shot? Obviously, you know, Critical Role like really opened all this up. I think it was an idea that just took the world by storm, and especially our little corner of the world.
Sure.
But yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, a big part of it is acting, you know? So I think like anybody who's playing Dungeons and Dragons is acting. But you know, having it be our profession, it does help.
Right. And that's interesting. I guess I've never really specifically considered it to be acting, but I guess there's no real difference.
No.
How would I know? I have not been an actor.
Well, I've been doing it for a while, and I can tell you, if you're playing Dungeons and Dragons, you're acting.
So then, how did you just in general get into tabletops?
As a kid in the 80s, my friends, my neighbor's older brother was really into, you know, all the stuff in the 80s that that parents were being cautioned was like tied to the devil, you know, like heavy metal music and Dungeons and Dragons and all that good stuff.
So all the cool stuff.
Yeah. Denim jackets, heavy metal, Dungeons and Dragons. We were obsessed with whatever he was doing, and he was playing Dungeons and Dragons. And a few times when he did not have his regular friends to play with, he would run a game for us. And I've been in love with it since then.
So what made you transition then from being a casual player to then actually running your own games?
Well, I think a lot of it was the fact that I was living in New York when I was a kid, and that's where, you know, we were playing all these games. We were playing a lot of Dungeons and Dragons. We were playing Hero Quest, which was like a really cool like old school board game that that we would play like when we didn't have our buddy's older brother to DM for us. but then I moved to North Carolina, which it's hard enough being a new kid in a new school, especially, you know, a Yankee, as it were, in the South, without like saying like, hey, who wants to play Dungeons and Dragons? You know, like, There was not a vibrant Dungeons and Dragons community at my
sure.
rural North Carolina high school at the time. So I kind of went underground with it. You know, I was still buying modules and books and magazines and everything and creating all my characters and you know, writing stories and all this stuff. So I think that really kind of awoke the DM spark for me. And then, or at least kept it burning, as it were. And then when I started playing again a few years ago with 5e, a friend of mine was running the game. And I think there was just a couple times where he was like, listen, guys, I haven't had time to prep a session this week. Like, I don't know what we're going to do. And I was like, hey, you know, I'll run a session. And then and that's how that happened. You know, then we kind of like we're rotating. And I'm equally in love with DMing and playing. So that's good for me.
Yeah, they definitely are entirely different worlds. I'm constantly reminded every time. I'm mainly a DM, but when brought back into being a player, it's like totally a different world.
Yeah.
Saying that you like them both, prefer one or the other in any way, or what are your, I guess, experiences with both?
Like I said, I love them both. And
right.
For me, it's a lot like, I used to be in a sketch comedy group, and we would write all of our own material. And when you were in a scene that you wrote, that's like, then it's like a lot of pressure, you know, there's
sure.
kind of like, you're listening for the laughs. You're like, oh, should I have done this differently? And, which that to me is like DMing. So that's like, there's, it's very rich. There's more, there's like, it's more kind of like, on the line as it were. But then when you're in a scene that somebody else wrote, you're just, you know, you're like, hey, if this sucks, it's not my fault. You know? Like, and you can just kind of like have fun, have a couple more beers than you would if you were,
sure
running the game. So yeah, I mean, it's too even to call.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and I definitely feel that idea of like the pressure of, I'll say, success when DMing.
Yeah.
And that's, I think for me, what has made it feel more rewarding than being a player. But in that same deal, it's like I can take them both. I just know that if I'm not DMing, then it gives me less reason to think about the game all week. Whereas
right.
if I'm DMing, it's like constantly, you know, making plans, doing whatever.
Yep. Running the numbers, trying to make sure everybody's having a good time.
Exactly. So then, you know, for your game, you are in actually a homebrew world.
Yeah.
So have you always run in homebrew worlds? Did you start in predetermined ones? And I guess if so, what made you transition into homebrew?
Yeah. So I have always played homebrew. I feel like back in the day, it was just like I didn't even know there were like modules until
right.
like I'd been playing Dungeons and Dragons for 6 years, you know? Like, and then I was like, oh, I think I there was like this this huge, like back when Drizzt Dwarden was becoming like super popular
right.
in the like early 90s or whatever, there was this like Menzo Barons and like Ultimate Box that I saw at like Walden Books or something in the mall, and I was like, oh man, I gotta get that, you know.
Yeah.
I had to like talk my parents into dropping $60 on something that like I never actually used to play a game, but I read it all. So yeah, I mean, it's always been like homebrew stuff for me, and I've played, in a couple, module campaigns. But I've never run one all the way through. I've started a couple, but never finished. But yeah, I'm a homebrew guy. I love reading the published modules. I love, using them, especially like for one shots or like to add something to my campaign.
Sure.
But yeah, I've always been more of a homebrew guy.
And for your current one that you're using for the Cast Eye podcast, is that a new one that you made specifically for the game, or is that like a long running one that you're finally now, you know, bringing to the world, so to speak?
It is a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B.
Fair enough.
You know, it is one of those things where, like, you know, if as a DM, when you have like, all right, I've created this scenario where if, you know, if they decide to go right, I have this scenario that I'm going to use. And then they go left and you're like, oh, well, this scenario is now in the toolbox for later. Like this,
right.
This will not go to waste. Yeah, some of it is stuff like that I've developed as like my, like in campaigns that I played in, like a character's backstory, you know, where I've kind of like, I'm a serial overwriter of
sure.
my character's backstories. So like Ober was like where one of my old characters was from. And then I kind of like developed it more. And then I know we said we weren't going to talk about COVID, but, over the past year, I've had a lot of downtime. And,
sure.
for part of that, my fiance, who I live with, had to go down, to New Jersey and stay with her parents, for a little while to help out. And so I was like in quarantine without my roommate slash, you know, betrothed. And, I had a whole lot of free time and I was like, at first I was going to design an entirely new game. And then, you know, so I did that. I spent like a month designing a new game, which will never see the light of day. but then like for that game, I was like, all right, also let me create this world too, to go along with this game. So I'd like really like fleshed out these ideas. You know, I was just like spending 6 or 7 hours a day, like working on this thing when I wasn't, cause I'd already watched all of Netflix. but,
just crushed the entire backlog.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Gone.
I was like, is there anything new on Netflix? No. All right. I guess I'll go type my made up stuff some more. But yeah, then I said, like I said, I met up like for the first drink I had, last year, I met one of my Ryan Andes, who's on the show. I met him for a drink. We're like, because we used to see each other like 3 or 4 times a week at auditions and stuff, you know.
Right.
So we'd always get the chance to catch up because it's a very small like world of, you know, dudes with deep voices. You see the same. You see the same 7 guys at every audition, you know.
It's like when you're past a certain height, just
yeah.
like y'all just know each other.
Yeah.
Same deal with deep
yeah.
voices.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of dummies like standing in a waiting room, like trying to outpace each other. You know, like, oh hey man, what's going on? How's everything? Yeah. Oh, I just crushed it in there, dude. Yeah. So we went out for a drink, and I was wearing this. I have this really sweet hat that I ordered off Etsy that looks like the Patagonia. Bear, you know, but it's an owl bear. And I was
oh,
wearing
okay.
that, and he was like, is that an owl bear? Said, do you play D&D? And then it was, you know, from there we were like, oh yeah, you know, we're gonna do a podcast, man. It's gonna be great. And so
by the way you're saying that, it sounds like one drink turned into many, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was we stayed out a little bit longer than we had initially planned on, but
so it goes.
Yeah.
That's great. So then, you know, taking it back, you mentioned that you said you were working on a custom game that will never see the light of day. That's fine. I won't ask you to release anything, but, I guess what was the motivation behind that? What was the driving force behind, let me make my own tabletop?
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that kind of ties in to the creation of, Thorum, of our world, because I wanted to do a kind of like lower, low magic, more combat oriented game, which if you've listened to the show, you know, we only had like one combat in the first like
right.
7 episodes, but you know, we do like it. We do enjoy it. And so I was trying to make this like really like dynamic combat system, like taking a lot of stuff from third edition, from fourth edition, you know, even like the older stuff, the older crazy first and second edition stuff. And, you know, games like Dungeon Crawl Classics, which I love. And just like, you know, I have a shelf full of rules. And I was basically like kind of taking and modifying and changing all the stuff that I really liked in order to kind of design this like kind of lower magic, more combat focused, more martial combat focused game. And then I was like, and then I, after doing that, I looked at all the other ones that people have made and I was like, maybe we don't need another one of these. But I've tried to kind of incorporate all that stuff that I developed into the setting of the podcast. And we have like some homebrew like weapon and combat rules that we use that I have cribbed from my never to see the light of day game system.
Yeah, and that's, you know, very often what I see is the OSR style is just picking and choosing from all of the games you've played through the past and the things that you liked and just saying, let's make that mine and turn it into my own little Frankenstein.
Yep. 100%.
So a noble goal at the very least.
Yeah.
And hey, you know, it's never wasted. I'm sure you learned a whole bunch from that process. Oh,
yeah. I definitely learned to respect the people who do it like for real. Like that's it's an undertaking.
Yeah, believe that.
Yeah.
It's easy to look at the end product and just say, what is this? How did you get to it? Versus spending hours a day going, how do I get to this?
Yeah, you're like, I could do this. This seems, I have a computer. I played role-playing games. I have the utmost respect for people who create like legit working systems.
And so you mentioned this was, again, creating your world of Thorum, as you said.
Yeah.
You know, tell me about the basis of that. You mentioned low magic as a theme at the very least, but what else do you really take from that?
So I loved when I was a kid, I loved, you know, like He-Man and like Thundar the Barbarian and that kind of like old school Frank Frazetta, Fire and Ice, and like basically all like the like violent cartoons of the 80s, you know?
Sure.
That I've always like loved that aesthetic, Conan and all these guys. And I think what we wanted to do was like get that aesthetic without some of the, you know, can we curse?
You're more than welcome to.
Thank you. Without like the toxic bullshit that comes along with a lot of like kind of, you know, the older like quote unquote like grognard type stuff. We wanted to keep the cool stuff and not have any like nonsense.
Yeah.
I think in kind of like building our world from the ground up allowed us to get that feeling and have that dynamic kind of without some of this
the baggage,
right? In some like already created worlds, like there's, you know, inherent kind of like baked in crap that we didn't want to use. So we kind of just in the same way you steal from you steal from games you like, you're gonna just like steal those themes. That's how we ended up with Thorum.
Yeah. Hey, all great artists steal. Anyone else is a liar.
That's right.
and you've said we a couple of times with building that. Was this a collaborative effort?
Yeah, for sure. I kind of took the brunt of the creation, but with a lot of Dominic Santa Catarina, who's on the show. He has been my writing partner for a long time, and he's the only one on the show who's not a voice or not an actor or a voice actor or any of that stuff. He's a history teacher and a writer, and so like having him as an asset while doing that helped like kind of establish like a real feel to the to the world, you know, where I could say like, listen, I want Ulber to be like this. I want it to have like this feel. Like, what do we need to kind of have like historically, like background wise, to make that make sense. And then we would talk about it and he would bring his knowledge of real world history and we could apply it to the game. So he's been a huge help with that. And then with everybody, everyone kind of chose to be from different parts of the continent. And a lot of that, you know, like DMing, you kind of like you sketch out what you need and then you like let the rest get filled in. And so with the world, I kind of like would go back and forth as we were doing our session zeros, would go back and forth with everybody about like where they were from. And then kind of like from their backstories, I would then build up the where they were from.
Right. So you kind of write them a blank check to start and say, hey, you know what? I don't have this area established. Go wild and I'll work from there.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. Very collaborative process.
Yeah. Having that history, I guess, teacher, I'm sure, major as well. Just a lover of history, though, to bounce ideas off of. Oh, my gosh. That would be so helpful.
Yeah. It's a real gift. Yeah. If Dominic, if you're listening to this, I don't mean it. You're the worst.
So then, yeah, talk to me about this world, because I mean, I really do. I love just hearing about the places people have set up. So, I mean, for you, is the focus on a lot of the cities, or is it on the Pantheon? Do you care about that aspect, or what's like your big thing that you're like, I love just working on this?
It's a great question. So the Pantheon, the gods of Thorim are actually like really, tied into the story, because in, a part of the low magic setting, that we're going for, we also, part of that is that like the gods have become distant, like the gods kind of like stopped interacting with the world, you know, a couple centuries before the events of what's happening now. And so two of our characters on the show, our cleric Quant and our paladin Feltian, they are the first people to actually like wield or to be like avatars of a god's power, as far as they know, in the world in a couple centuries. So in that respect, like the Pantheon is really important because they're still worshipped and they're still like the gods, but because it's not like, you know, you pray for something and then, you know, you leave God a voicemail and he gets back to you and whatever, there's not like this tangible like reaction that you have in a lot of fantasy settings. So yeah, they are very important. And then, you know, as we get into more of it, there's some other gods, some more outsider Cthulhu-y gods that we're gonna get into. spoiler alert down the line, but yeah, I kind of just like, and that goes back to your question about like why build a world from the ground up, and I think a big part of it is that like you can design every aspect of the world to serve the type of story that you want to tell, and so you know like with the kind of like grittier, that's an overused word, but the kind of like grittier, you know, dark and dangerous
sure
and you know, so having like the distant gods and like there's the only people who use magic, they are sequestered in their towers and they don't teach anybody else. So like we could, yeah, because we were creating it from the ground up, we could have all these in-world things that serve the tone and feeling that we're going for.
So, and not to to give too much away, potentially, if you want to keep things spoiler-free, but is there any reason why gods have started to resurface now?
Yes. Yeah. It ties in with the kind of Cthulhu-y stuff that we have going on in the background too. A little bit of as the kind of pendulum swung one way, things and a power vacuum was created as these gods left. Then, you know, there's these new forces, these new gods, so to say, kind of coming in. And then now there is a need for these distant gods to come back, or at least some of them, or at least one of them established, is coming back and taking an interest in what's going on in the world again.
So are the cleric and the paladin both tied to the same god in this case then?
Yeah. And that's an example of just luck.
Okay.
Because I had created the pantheon, and so we had all our different gods, and they both happened to choose Mirathos, the god of the sun, as their patron, as their god. So yeah, I was like, oh, that from a writing standpoint, that works out perfectly, because you know, really fit that into the story very easily.
Right. And when you approached everyone with this idea of like, hey, it's going to be low magic, you know, was there any type of, I guess, hesitancy with that? Or was it just kind of like, again, luck would have it, everyone's kind of all right with playing that type of style and, you know, wanting to, I guess, explore that idea of being the first one to receive these types of blessings?
Yeah. I think it is a combination of like, yeah, luck that like everybody was into it. No one was like, no, I wanted to play my, you know, gnome artificer from, you know, who works at Fantasy Starbucks. Like there was we didn't have anybody who wanted to do that. And I think, and you know, and let me say, there's nothing wrong with if that's the game you're playing.
Of course.
Absolutely. I would love to jump into that game. But for the purposes of our show, for the purposes of our game, we did kind of, and this was baked into the setting that I was trying to create before, the game that I was trying to create before, where like everything is kind of dangerous and new and unmapped. You know, like if like we are creating the monsters as well. So like if you see a monster, it's not like, oh, there's that's a bugbear. I know what bugbears are. It's like, you know, what is that? Like what's going on? And that's something that, I think, DCC, does so well of like, I forget how they phrase it exactly, but they say like, this is not a monster. This is the monster. Which I think is a great, great mechanic. And goes along with having everything be new and interesting. Like this is the, you know, if you're using magic, if you're a sorcerer with like a wild magic sorcerer, you're the only one, you know, like
right.
if, yeah, like you are like, I wanted to like really make it feel like these characters are the main characters in the world, you know?
And I totally get that. Say I took a very similar approach with my world. And one of the big reasons was because anytime something would happen in, we'll say, in the Forgotten Realms, as it is, it always just felt like, why is this the party's problem every single time? Because there's so many people around. You throw a stone and you've got a high level cleric.
Yeah.
Why does this level 2 numbskull have to be the one with the weight of the world on his shoulders?
Yeah. Why isn't Elminster handling this? Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So I 100% understood, or I guess relate to that, I just agree.
it's very much like when I remember watching the third Christian Bale Batman movie, Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, that's Rises. Yeah.
And you know, as like the stadium is exploding and there's this nuclear bomb set to go off, I was like, why didn't somebody call Superman? You know, like, and I realized like it hadn't really joined the universe hadn't joined at that point. But I was just like,
sure.
Like, why is Batman ever like having to do this? Like beat up somebody in an alley, stop a mugging. Absolutely.
Right.
Like deal with a nuclear bomb, get Green Lantern, call Superman, like get somebody with some powers here to do this. So like you're saying, like, in our world, it's like, it's our heroes or nobody who is going to handle it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think with 5th edition especially, it has this huge focus on making you feel like the main character, because you want to feel like the main character.
Right.
You're playing a game, you know, where what else would you be doing? You don't want to play an NPC.
Yeah.
But again, with the world not reflecting that, it just feels so off. So I feel like a lot of people do start to gravitate towards that idea of like, well, what if we just took the power level on everybody down a couple notches?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a big fan of that idea.
Let's see here. So far, how long have you been running this specific game?
Let's see. I'm currently editing episode 8. We just recorded episode 9 last night. But before we started recording, for a month and a half, maybe 2 months, we were running a game every week to just kind of like develop. We were running running one shots, like non-continuity one shots, where we would like develop the world and like kind of like get to know the characters, and you know, like flesh out backstory, get familiar with like kind of like the mechanics that I've tweaked, and so yeah, so we just finished our 9th session of the actual, you know, produced show. But before that, yeah, there was, so I guess in total probably five months.
Okay. I'd say. So and this is your all first time playing together specifically as a group then?
All of us together? Yes. But then, you know, we've all played
right
together.
Bits and pieces
but not
here and there.
All of us together. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean that's a good idea though, of just before you actually start recording and everything, getting that rapport, getting the group synergy kind of going as yeah, otherwise you get the first couple of weeks and you're like, I don't even know these people, let alone do I feel comfortable role-playing in front of them.
100%. Yeah. I think that really served us well to establish that, you know, that relationship with each other and to like really like get into like drop into the characters. And I think because of that, you know, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but like we did have we had a combat in episode 2, and then from episode, I want to say like 3 to 6 or 7, it was kind of just like talking to people. And sure. I think it stayed interesting and it stayed engaging because, you know, my wonderful players had like taking the time and like really like gotten to know their characters. So it was like, you know, I wasn't like, oh, when are we going to fight something? I mean, I was, but but I was still engaged with what was going on, which I think is a product of like being able to really inhabit the characters.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, feel free to at any point here pat yourself on the back, because that's what we're here to do, you know.
Fantastic.
give yourself a platform to do some back patting. Yeah. We'll go with that. I also know with my group, even like if it's like 3 sessions and there's no combat, they start to get punchy, you know, where they're just like, let's go off into the woods and just get into a fight just because, let's roll some dice.
Yeah. Let's pour a beer on ourselves and then stumble down back alleys until someone tries to mug us.
Right.
Yeah. We almost had a couple of those.
So is there any type of, you know, story, I guess that might not be a good way of putting it. We'll say like a theme that you're kind of going for with this world, of, I don't know, like a specific type of hardship, or is it kind of just what the characters bring and what each player brings?
I think, you know, once again, I think it's a combination. And one of the things that for me is very rewarding and very almost like cathartic, I guess, is like being the hero, you know, like, you know, not, you know, there's so much shit that happens in the real world that like we can't affect, you know, that, or really we can't affect, we can't all like be heroes and like step up and say, no, this is not, you know, but in a game, in Dungeons and Dragons, in TTRPGs, you can like say like, I am I am not standing by. I am not, you know, letting bad things happen. I am a light in the darkness, which right. is kind of like the through line for this game of like kind of being like, you know, in these kind of like dark times that these like good people have to like, you know, do extraordinary things, which I think is fun, you know, which is why we're doing it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, listening to the first episode, as I have, it doesn't seem like everybody's starting from being a good person right out the gate here.
Yeah.
There was a particular incident with a, we'll say gambling that went a little bit too far.
Yeah. 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 And as much as, you know, I'm a very method actor. So as I was playing that NPC, Lord Edric, who I've come to love, I was getting pretty salty there as the bets were, unwarranted, getting pushed up.
Yes. And, to give a little bit of context for yeah. anybody, long story short, the player characters had decided to, ask for bets from the crowd for something and yeah. kept trying to raise somebody higher and higher and higher without really chipping in anything themselves. Just kind of like, oh, you can put in 20. How about 30? How about 40?
Yeah. Just kind of picking on the guy.
Yeah.
Just kind of picking on the guy. And, yeah, it did not end up going well for the PCs. A cherished family heirloom was destroyed. And but as I was saying, like as much as it was like kind of gratifying to do it in the moment, and as annoying as I kind of found it at the time, looking back on it and often like as I do look back on things, I'm like, oh, you know what, that actually was great, even though it pissed me off at the time. That was actually really because like it, you know, like I think it's great that like we're not starting off as heroes, you know, we're
right.
not starting off as like these like paragons of you know, good, and like they're, you know, they're kind of ordinary assholes, you know, like the like They're not perfect, and Quant especially in that moment had like a real kind of come to Mirathos moment, as it were. He was like, you know, maybe I am abusing my power if I'm using it to kind of like try and hustle a carnival game,
right?
And so it ended up being a really interesting character moment, and like kind of like. Then this NPC that I had created to kind of like wave in the background is now like I'm not a major character, but like a pretty strong supporting character. And, you know, that's the beauty of the game, I think.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And, you know, one of the things that stood out to me when I was listening to it was a fantastic way of, punishing characters with in-game consequences and not mm-hmm. taking it personally. I know you said you're yeah. like, yeah, looking back on it, like, man, that really did make me a little peeved off, which is
yeah.
totally normal for all DMs out there. Getting
oh, yeah.
a little upset at your players
oh, yeah.
for trying to push yeah. things, totally normal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that showed a really a high-level mastery, so to speak, of GMing, of just being able to quickly
man.
Turn that into such a memorable moment, which was, you know, say spoilers for the first episode, but go listen to it because it's
yeah.
it's worth hearing back. You know, taking the crossbow, as you said,
yeah.
cherished family heirloom from this party member, and didn't just take it, said, I'm going to throw this in the fire and
yeah.
burn it in front of you because you were a jerk, and now I'm showing you were a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah, and I gotta give credit to Dom there too, because I fixated on the crossbow because he had mentioned it in his character description, and he's like, I have this worn crossbow I wear on
mm-hmm.
my back or something like that, but there was no mention of it being like a family heirloom.
Sure,
it was just like something that he had described, and I picked up on it. So then, you know, when he kind of you know, in a lot of us have improv backgrounds too, and like in improv, you talk a lot about like just getting a gift from your scene partner, you know, when they like really like set you up for something nice. And in that moment where Tom's like, yeah, this crossbow's been in my family for generations, I was like, oh, what a gift. Oh, man. I am absolutely throwing this in the goddamn bonfire. And, you know, it's, but like, yeah, it was, you know, I give credit to them for creating the situation, as much as it pissed me off in the moment, for creating that situation where this like really kind of like dynamic, fun story moment happened.
Right. And, you know, just going back to the idea of them being heroes and growing into that role, you've said for the past, what, 4 or 5 sessions now, at least, they've just been talking.
Yeah.
In that time, have they been affecting the world? How have they already, even at, I assume, low levels, I didn't specifically hear levels mentioned.
Yeah.
But, you know, how have they already affected the world and changed it?
They have definitely affected the city so far. Because we did start off at level 1. We've just hit level 2. We'll probably be hitting level 3 here pretty soon. they have become entangled with this whole situation that's going on in the city. And another real plus of like taking that kind of like 2 months of just like working backstory and playing together really gave me an opportunity to tie characters' backstories into the plot. So now I think like almost pretty much everybody has like a horse in the race. Is that the expression?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
A dog in the fight? I don't know. One of those guys.
Don't do that though.
Yeah. No. Don't even do that in your fantasy game. No one wants to see that. But yeah. So like they all have this like impetus. They all have this like real like kind of like visceral personal reason to be invested in the story. They have, and that is the hook, you know, or that is the crux, I guess, is finding the hook of like, you know, I've got this adventure and now here it is. And then the moment where like, well, why are we going to do it?
Right.
You know? And so like we've managed to find the why, and that really serves us. And they have now like they're involved with the nobility, they're involved with some less than legit business owners. They're in the mix.
Yeah, that's great. Say that was when I started a new campaign, I guess at this point nearing 2 years ago, one of the struggles I had was that initial, how do I get everybody actually invested in the story?
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, do you have any tips for that? What did you go for that you found so successful?
I mean, I think like for me, the number one tool, for a DM and for the party and for everybody who's playing the game is a session zero, where you talk about like what you want, what you're trying to do, the tone you're trying to set, the game style you're trying to play, and kind of like having all the players, all the people, all the real life people on the same page going into it, I think really helps you then in the world be on the same page too. And something we talk about off air is like, because we're not just like playing a game for ourselves, we're doing it with the idea of having like a finished product of like a performance.
Sure.
You know, in nothing like stalls a D&D game more than like an unlocked door. It's like,
right.
The door's unlocked. I'm gonna check it for traps. I'm gonna, like, I detect magic. Do I, you know, so like,
We're going to cast a fifth level history spell that lets me know everything about this door.
Right, right. Does my dwarven stone cunning help me at all? It's like, you know, and so like stuff like that, like, you know, around the table, like it's, you know, par for the course in a lot of games. It, like we kind of try and like streamline that. And something we talk about is like instead of finding a reason, like why not, like, find the reason why, like, find, like, instead of being like, oh, my character wouldn't do this because of this, like, instead of like, when you have that thought, like, switch it around and say, like, why, what makes my character want to do this?
Sure.
Like, you know, like, where's the hook for this character?
Yeah. I think a lot of that comes from being able to give players agency to make things on the fly, which is something that I feel like my players definitely struggle with a little bit. I try and tell them, like, hey, just because it's not written in your backstory doesn't mean you have to, like, you know, hold on to it. But you mentioned you come from an improv background. I don't know if others do with you.
Yeah, most of us.
Okay, so I'm sure you're all like, yeah, we're going to make something up if we don't have a good reason.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think for that, I think, you know, Dom, the one who does not have an improv background, he's actually really good at, when he's GMing or DMing, he is really good at, like, asking questions, like, kind of, like, leading questions of, like, oh, you know, and, like, oh, where are you from? Like, what was the town like, you know, and your parents, are they alive? Did they, like, what kind of business did they have? And so, like, he asks these leading questions that, like, if somebody doesn't have a backstory, he, like, can, through these questions, like, really, like, help them develop their backstory without even really, like, thinking about it too much. And I think when players are having maybe, like, a little bit of difficulty with that aspect, like, yeah, you can just kind of, like, you know, ask a question, and then, you know, with their answer, what new questions come up from the answer. That's something that has worked for us.
That's great. Well, at this point, I'll kind of turn it over to you. Was there anything that you, or I phrase that weirdly, whatever. Is there anything that you have wanted to talk about or want to talk about? Either, you know, tabletop related, games you've played, just stories to tell, whatever.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know, something I talk about a lot, especially like in the pre-show stuff, is how awesome the community is, the TTRPG community, like, that I mostly experience on Twitter. I spend a lot of time on Twitter, and, you know, like, that's how we met,
right?
I think we joined Twitter in, like, December or something, or, you know, I've been on Twitter for a long time, but, like, I entered into the TTRPG community, like, in December, and, like, it's so awesome. It's so cool. There's so many great people. And I love interacting with everybody and doing stuff like this, man. Again, thank you so much for having me on the show. Like, this is such a pleasure. And I want to say, like, I want to keep doing it. I want to keep talking to people. I want to keep working with people. You know, we should do a one shot sometime, you know? Like, I want to keep it going.
Keep
building these fun, awesome relationships with such cool people.
Yeah. And I've been doing the Twitter for our podcast now for, I guess, 2.5 years almost.
Wow. Yeah.
And in that time, it is crazy how things have changed, even just from the initial startup, where I would just go and basically troll the D&D hashtag. Right. Not in, like, a trolling way, but, like, just going around it and just,
like,
starting conversations with people. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. you know, just trying to, I guess, find the people in the first place. And nowadays you just do, like, a TTRPG solidarity, and it's like, boom, 500 followers overnight. Welcome to the party.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing all the legwork, man. helping build this thing up so I could just jump in here.
I won't take too much credit. I don't deserve it.
I think that is a really common theme, I think, with these really cool people I've been talking about. Like, you just, you know, like, oh, I don't deserve the credit. You do. You absolutely do. And I think that's, like, something that, like, it's a very common theme that I hear, like, whenever I say something nice about somebody in the community, they're always like, oh, I don't know. And it's like, no, like, seriously, like, great fucking job, man. Like, you like, everyone is doing such cool stuff, and, like, you meet such wonderful people who are doing, like, such cool projects, and it's really heartwarming. It's really exciting. It's really, like, you know, because a lot of us kind of, like, you know, a lot of us older guys, a lot of us elder millennials who kind of, like, who went through the, like, oh, this, like, first it was like, oh, this is devil stuff, you know, this is Satan, Then it was like, this is 100% for nerds. Like, only right. nerds do this.
No cultists and, here, just losers. Yeah, move along.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, and then like Harry Potter came out and people were like, oh, yeah. All right, Harry Potter's pretty cool. And then, you know, the Lord of the Rings movies. And then like, so we've kind of like, we've seen this, this renaissance of you know, fantasy, of science fiction and all this stuff. And like, I think at its core is like people, grown-ups, you know, not being ashamed to say anymore, like, I still like playing games. Like, I still like, look at my limited edition action figure, you know, like, right. look, check out this mini I painted. And it's like, yeah, you know, whereas like, you know, older, even older people are like, oh, well, you know, this is my house. Look at my lawn. Like, look at this stuff. You know, like we're embracing this fact that like, you never have to stop playing games. You never right. have to stop like playing with G.I. Joes. You never have to stop doing any of that shit. And you can just keep doing it. And there's this amazing, inclusive, welcoming community. And it really gasses me up, man. I really dig it.
Yeah, no, it's, I totally agree. So I felt the same thing just from, it is wild how many nice people there are.
yeah. It's crazy.
That said, even as a, I'll say new millennial, cause I am like right on the cusp. I love my lawn and I will take care of it.
right on. That's good.
But
that's
no. You're, but yeah, I love what you're saying though. Just that idea of like, it's, you don't have to be ashamed of liking things.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of it. It's like, I like that. I like that thing. So.
Yeah. I think it's a really, really beautiful thing that's kind of happened like in recently, like, especially like in the kind of like, what was it? 5e came out in 2014. And so like, I think like in that kind of, in like the 5 years, like before and like 2009 to where, whenever it's like, it's really like kind of been like mainstream again,
right.
become mainstream again or more mainstream than it was. And, I was a little bit of a gatekeeper in my early 20s, like when everybody started liking Harry Potter, and I was like, God, Lord of the Rings is the real fantasy, guys. Like that's the real stuff. Like,
right.
You keep your wizard school nonsense. And then, and then I watched the first Harry Potter movie, and then I, you know, I was in college at the time, and then I like was like skipping parties to like, I'm like, I'm read the new book's out, guys. I'm reading. There's a very important Quidditch tournament happening right now, so I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to go to the kegger at the Sigma Nu house. So, yeah. And it's like the acceptance, the generosity of spirit of everybody is really, really, really awesome. And I cannot wait to, you know, to like when we all start going to cons again, man, that's going to be so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm rolling over my Gen Con tickets from 2020. Cause yeah, that was just last year. Feels like a lifetime as it is.
It sure does. Yeah.
So rolling those over to 2022. That's nice. When the party starts.
Yep. I'm doing the same thing. So see you.
Perfect.
There.
See everybody there. Say it's exactly. It's going to be wild. I'm excited.
So many high fives. A lot of high fives.
Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on today. This is really fun talk, getting to hear about just, you know, in the short amount of time you've been doing the show compared to maybe some other people. It sounds like you guys have just like a really good start that I have appreciate hearing that. I'm sure other people looking to start APs will also appreciate you know, the path you've taken. Thank you so much. Yeah. This was awesome.
Thanks so much for having me, man. I really had a blast.
All right. And to everyone listening, thank you as well for sticking around. Mark, where can people find you?
I am at Mark Dmitri, MarkDmitri on Twitter and every other social media thing, except TikTok, I think, because as I said, I'm an old elder millennial, so I haven't figured out TikTok yet.
I haven't either. It's okay.
Yeah.
It scares me.
I went on it once and I was on it for like 5 hours and I was like, I can't do this anymore.
this isn't good. Got to get out of here.
I just watched 9,000 videos. Because they're only 4 seconds long. And of course, the Cast Eye podcast, we are at Cast Eye podcast on, again, all those same social media platforms.
All right. Yeah. And if you're listening, please do check them out. Say it's high quality. I will say again, they all have buttery smooth voices, which is just lovely. And yeah, that's it to plug our stuff. If you're not yet, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on the social media sites. Just go to monstersmulticlass.com/support and you can find everything that you need. And thanks for listening. Now we can cut the recording there.
Cut the record. All right.